ahí lo tiene Maradona, lo marcan dos, pisa la pelota Maradona, arranca por la derecha el genio del fútbol mundial, y es el tercero a tocar para Borruchaga, siempre Maradona, genio, 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 ta, 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 ta.
We woke in Australia to news today that was so sad, and yet no shock. Diego Maradona, the greatest player of a generation to many, the greatest player in the history of the world's most played and popular sport, has passed, aged 60. His heart failed him in the end. How he made hearts beat faster watching him play football. He is eternal in his native Argentina, a godlike status that will live forever. He's revered around the rest of the world, and if he's not revered, he's respected by even those whose blood he made boil from time to time. That audio you heard at the start was him at his absolute peak, drifting through England's best footballers at the 1986 World Cup. Victor Hugo Morales is called the stuff of legend. In the midst of a World Cup, Maradona basically won himself, with all due respect to his Argentinian teammates themselves, great footballers. He was untouchable, and to some extent, that's how he lived.
That ball was played through to him, but here's Maradona again. He has Burruchaga to his left and Valdano to his left. He won't need any of them. Oh, you have to say that's magnificent. There is no debate about that goal. That was just pure football genius.
I'm Adam Peacock, and welcome to the Fox Football Podcast. I wish we could be talking about something else, but nothing lasts forever. Of course, James Dodd from Fox Sports News, the football correspondent, joins me as well. Doddy, how did you react when you woke up this morning and heard the news?
Oh, very sadly, actually. You know, as someone who grew up in a country where Diego Armando Maradona is someone that's loved and hated in equal measure. I think, you know, it is sad because, you know, if you look at people of my dad's age, who's in his 60s now, you know, in 1986, that was a World Cup that he was in his pomp for. And to see the way that Diego Maradona used the hand of God, which, by the way, he coined himself, you know, that wasn't something that people, he used that phrase. And then, you know, to score the greatest goal in World Cup history soon after, it feels as though that was something that when I was a kid was taught to me that, you know, oh, you don't like this man. You shouldn't like this man. He's a cheat. But as you grow older, you know, you realise just what a genius he is. And he's like all geniuses. He was flawed. He had his mental health issues and he had his drug addictions and everything that came with it. But it was so sad because he's an icon.
Just a remarkable life from how he grew up, where he grew up, in the absolute slums of Argentina, and they thought when he rocked up to his first trial that he was older than he actually was, just malnourished, and they had to check the IDs and do all of that. And then by the time he was 11, he was being talked about on a national scale. He was obviously in love with the football very, very early, and that is what he had to get him out of the situation that he was in, to get himself into a whole new situation. It's quite incredible that how someone can be so good at one thing, better than anyone else that's ever done it perhaps, and yet how it affects the rest of their life. And it wasn't something that sat comfortably in terms of a normal life. You compare it to everyone else's life and it's just incomparable, really, to what that guy went through both on and off a football pitch. Is just, yeah, it's you can only watch it. You can't really appreciate it because living it would have been something else.
It would, you know, for someone who his nickname was, amongst others, El Diego was the one, but El Pibo de Oro, in terms of, you know, golden boy is what that translates to. And you could see that this guy, as you said, had the problems where he thought he was malnourished. And that's quite a common thing. We had the same thing with Lionel Messi. Carlos Tevez was very similar when they were growing up in these slums. I think Diego came from Lanús in Mexico, in Argentina rather. But, you know, they have this thing where they know that there is a special commodity here. And you know, that going into that World Cup in 1982, where he was essentially booted out of it, you know, like they were in those days. It was like when you see George Best, you know, they had the ability to not be protected by referees. They were kicked from pillar to post, these creative players. To then have that as the launch pad to your career, where you then go to Barcelona and, you know, his time at Barcelona is weird because it's not remembered fondly as, you know, what he did at Napoli, because we'll come on to that, and that's something incredible in itself. But he still scored 38 goals in 58 games at Barcelona in 2 years.
And it's looked upon poorly.
And he had a broken ankle. In those days, a broken ankle isn't like, you know, the sports science that's available to these days. And he was back after 3 months.
So he came out of, obviously, Boca Juniors, where he was revered and always will be at that famous ground. And you just see him at Boca Juniors games on highlights that you see, and he's just beside himself. He still feels like he's playing it and part of it, which he very much is when he was there. So he goes to Europe and tries to make a name for himself, but it did go pear-shaped at Barcelona. It just didn't mesh. But we'll get to Napoli in a minute, because in essence, that was the perfect fit for him at the time. Napoli, what they were and what they were trying to be, and Diego, what he was and what he was trying to be. But the famous, famous vision, and this is Diego at his best and worst at the same time. And we talk about it with a smile on our face now, but you look at it at the time and you can imagine what it meant to the people that were watching it on both sides. I talk of the Copa del Rey and Barcelona and Bilbao. Mm-hmm. And it just turned into absolute mayhem, and Diego was heavily, heavily involved.
So the backdrop to the whole story was that earlier in the season, we mentioned that Diego had a broken ankle. That was caused by an Athletic Bilbao player, Andoni Goikoetxea. And it was a terrible tackle, and it ruled him out for 3 months. And the doctors and everyone got him back in time. But then at the culmination of this season, the three biggest clubs in Spain at the time, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Athletic Club, this was a Copa del Rey final played at the Santiago Bernabeu between Barcelona and Athletic Club.
So the three come together.
The three come together in like a real melting pot of footballness, if that makes any sense. But in this final, Andoni Goikoetxea had another pop at him, putting a terrible tackle on him. This was a final where they knew they set out to go after Diego Maradona, to wind him up, get under his skin. There was a lot of racial tension in this game. He was getting a lot of racial slurs from the crowd about his dad, I think it was. And this all culminated in the end. Barcelona lost, and he had enough. And he squared up with a guy called Miguel Sola, who, you know, he was then inciting the crowd to be on his side against Diego Maradona. They were giving him xenophobia. There was a lot of xenophobia around this time. There was a lot of racist chants at him. And he lost his cool. Mm. And he knocked someone out with his knee. He elbowed someone else in the face. You know, him and I think he headbutted Miguel Sola, the guy he came up against. And this was...
I think this is where MMA was born, on that pitch night.
Yeah, and because you look at... And they always say there were two Diego Maradonas. There was Diego and there was Maradona. Diego was the impoverished kid that had this joyful exuberance for football and just his life was football. Maradona was the alter ego, and that was the bad side. And we'll come on to that, because that's what happens to him at Napoli. But Barcelona as such went, you know what, we've paid a world record fee of £5 million for this guy. 2 seasons, 38 goals, 58 games. He's not for us. And that, you know, that was summed up just because of what happened in that Copa del Rey final. And that's when they sold him to Napoli.
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Valdado smoked and... They're appealing for offside. The ball came back off the foot of Steve Hodge. And Maradona gives Argentina the lead. The England players protesting to the referee. But the little man who started it by walking past Glenn Hoddle, that's where the ball came from Hodge. Maradona had continued the run forward. And the goal is given. Now, at what point was he offside? Or was it a use of the hand that England are complaining about?
Hand of God. So that is that moment. We've spoken of the Copa del Rey controversy. Earlier we had that magnificent call, and I can't get enough of that Argentinian call of that goal. And then we had the Barry Davis one to lead us into this one, the English one, which was a little more refined and reserved given what happened. But that, the hand of God right there, what it meant to Argentina at the time. We'll get to the English side of things, because you have obviously a take on that. But given everything that had happened with a war between the two countries, an actual war, the Falklands War, and if you don't know the history, read up on it, because I'm watching it at the moment again through The Crown, the Netflix series, and they're just about to kick off in the Falklands, this tiny batch of islands, remote islands that England and Argentina started fighting about. And there was that, and there was Maradona, and there was England, and England thought they had a chance of winning the World Cup. And he goes and does that. And after 10 seconds there of the commentary, you realise that then the commentator realised what happened, and it's going to be talked about for the rest of time. Well, no VAR, obviously. If there was VAR, we're not sitting here talking about that because it's chalked off and it's no goal and fate is twisted. But that, for Argentina, summed up Maradona, that he does everything to win and he gives them everything that they want in a football sense, which is by far and away their biggest pastime, their biggest meaning to life outside perhaps family. It's quite an incredible moment, and there's two ways of looking at it, and the Argentinian side is through a smile because they got away with it and they're happy about it and they beat England, who they went to war with. It's quite incredible.
It really is, because the thing that I have come to love about what he did, and this is speaking as an Englishman, is that he did everything on a pitch for other people. He didn't do it for himself. This was a man that was, throughout his life, did everything else that other people wanted and persuaded him to do and manipulated him to do. And this was a street kid from Argentina who essentially put two fingers up at England and said, you know what? This is for the war. This is for everything that's happened to us. This is for everything I've fought for as a kid growing up. And to do that, and like he said, call it himself, call it the hand of God, to even rub it in even further and have no shame about it at all, it would be the equivalent if you flipped it on its head and it was the same fixture, but Argentina had stolen the Isle of Wight from England.
Mm.
And this would be Wayne Rooney doing it, a street kid who's grown up in Liverpool, not in the same circumstances, but the same street passion for football and the same love for football. And him doing it and running away and not caring the fact that he's gotten away with it and what he's done here is sensational. But, you know, we've seen people since speak about what he then went on to do. And, you know, a lot of people would quite happily, when you're growing up, say, oh, yeah, you know, he's a cheat, and not mention the greatest goal in World Cup history,
yeah,
which is what he then went on to do.
How's he talked about in England these days?
There's a real mix. As I said, there is the people of a certain generation who were heartbroken by what he did and refused to accept that he was a genius,
yeah,
because he's a figure of hate. But I think as people have grown, as younger people have begun, you know, have grown old and have been privy to what like YouTube can offer and reports from journalists and former players and teammates, what they say about him, there is an acceptance that, wow, this man really is somebody that touched everyone and not just, you know, in the quarterfinal of a World Cup with his hand. Like, this is the appreciation of just how good this man really was.
Especially with the ball at his feet, where he was the most comfortable in life. And Gary Lineker told a fantastic bunch of stories on BT Sports coverage of the Champions League hours after the passing of Diego Maradona.
I actually played with him as well for half a game, played for the rest of the world, and at Wembley against, funnily enough, for the English league side, because it was centenary, I played for the rest of the world because I was at Barcelona at the time. And all the players, there was people like Platini on the pitch, lots of great, great players from around the world, and everyone was totally in awe of him. First thing he did was in the dressing room, he sat there, just a pair of shorts, and you know, like you roll your socks up. He just stood them and he juggled them on his left foot, just like that, for about 5 minutes. And everyone was going, whoa. And then we went out on the pitch and I don't think I'm tuned in. I think I can stand up and show you this. He did something that was incredible. One of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen on a football pitch. It might not sound that amazing to you at home, but you, I think you'll appreciate this. He juggled the ball all the way out to the centre circle. And then he got to the centre circle, still juggling it. And then he went, bang, and he whacked it as high as he possibly could and he waited. And it came down, and he went bang, and he did it again. And he did it 13 times, and the most he ever did was walk 3 paces to it. And all of us were sitting there going, oh, my God, that's...
like I was then.
That's impossible.
It is.
And I remember going to training the next day in the Barcelona and stuff, and we all tried it, and the best anyone did was 3, and they were running for the third one. And I've just never seen anyone have just such a beautiful affection with a football.
And you look at the pitches that they played on.
Yeah.
They were like mud baths half the time. They were allowed to tackle around your hip, yeah, hip high, the weight of the ball. Well,
that's what people don't realise, is the fact that you could kick people. And in many ways, he was kicked out, of course, of the 1982 World Cup in Spain when he did retaliate and get a red card as well. But in 86, he was just unplayable. I mean, I know you talk about the hand of God goal, and we could argue about that. But the other goal he scored in that game, I mean, you've got to realise as well, the pitch at the Azteca was awful. Mm. It had been kind of relayed just before. And you know, like you relay your garden with small pieces of turf. It was exactly like that. And every time you put your foot on one piece of turf, it just it kind of just disappeared under your foot. And to do what he did, that little pivot and turn on the halfway line and then go past the players like they weren't there, was just a most remarkable thing. It's the closest in my life that I've ever felt like I ought to applaud someone else scoring a goal. Obviously, I didn't because you get destroyed back home. But he was head and shoulders the best player of my generation.
Mm. What were the tactics in that game, Gary? Were you man-to-man marking him?
No, because we'd never really played man-to-man marking. So what we actually did, and we talked, it was basically, as soon as he gets the ball, whoever's closest, you get to him. The trouble with man-to-man marking, because he was so clever, once he beats one, then what happens? Yeah. So it was a difficult one, but whatever we tried, it didn't work.
Yeah, how he was with the football was just indescribably good, and passing it on now to my son as well. And I actually took him to watch that documentary that is now on Amazon, I think it is, but we went to the movies and watched it just to teach him what this guy's life was like, probably to learn a few alternate lessons, i.e. don't do what he did in many respects in terms of lifestyle. But that was a fantastic piece of cinematography that summed up his time at Napoli and how it twisted, how it turned. He went from absolute hero and then, they got him in the end, so to speak. And the two merged, the Diego and the Maradona merged in the one place at the one time.
And for those who aren't aware of Diego's story, obviously said he left, we joined Barcelona on that world record fee. 2 years later, he then joined Napoli for a world record fee at the time. I think it was about £6.7 million, around that.
Which would buy you a centre-half from Bristol City now.
Exactly right, not even that. But then this is a club in the south of Italy, in Naples, a city that is never far away from boiling point. It's you could say, if you would compare it to a city around Europe, it would be Liverpool of the 80s. It would be Marseille in France of the 80s. This really unionised, hardcore city that were constantly looked down upon by the richer provinces and cities of northern Italy, the likes of, Turin and Milan and Rome. They looked on it as like the sewer dwellers, is what I think they used to call people from Naples. They'd never won a league championship. Mm. He goes there, wins one in his first season, comes runner-up twice, and then wins one again. He wins them a Coppa Italia. He wins them a UEFA Cup. This is what he has done. If you would have said, Diego Maradona is going to sign for Napoli, he's going to do this, people, A, would have said, no, he's not signing for Napoli. We're not going to get someone of his class here. And B, we are never going to win those titles. And they've never won one since. Mm. And that shows you just how amazing his contribution was to Italian football, to the history of Napoli. You know, it's only recently that I think it was maybe Marek Hamšík, I think, took over the top goal scorer at Napoli. Mm. And or maybe Dries Mertens, it might have been Dries Mertens actually, took over the award of top goal scorer in their club history. And, you know, this is a player that, as you said, and Asif Kapadia sums it up amazingly well in Diego Maradona, the movie, because he says it's so obvious how he was taken advantage of. Mm. This was a Diego, as you say, Diego v. Maradona type situation. It's the devil and the angel sitting on the shoulders of his life constantly, and of how the mafia played a massive part in making him do things that he didn't really want to do. And you could see the story of unbridled joy on his face when he's on the pitch and when he's off. Picture this, you're going down the street and you're being hounded by hundreds of people everywhere you go, banging on your door. Back in those days, where the TV cameras were literally on your doorstep, not even at the end of your driveway, just wanting a comment about the upcoming game.
And you have the call to the madame at 3 o'clock in the morning as well, and figuring out how you're going to go on the weekend while you're trying to put your order in, so to speak. It's just quite remarkable. And again, I can only reiterate how wonderful a piece of cinematography it is, because it didn't use modern day footage. It was all file footage, and working from a TV production standpoint, that's almost impossible to do that quality of work with that at your disposal. I mean, I know he obviously got some favours in and had a lot of file footage and friends that provided a lot to it, but to put it in chronological terms and give us that historical piece of art that will always be there to sum up this guy's life and put it perfectly was remarkable. Do you reckon it did turn on the 1990 World Cup with Maradona and how he was viewed and everything? It was almost like ADBC. It was like 1990 World Cup, and that's when it started to really wane, and he never got real control back of his life.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, everyone will know that as soon as you said that, the famous scene in my mind is just him screaming down the barrel of the camera when he's on pitch side.
And that is in 1994 at the World Cup, and this moment.
Quickly back in play. Oh, lovely play there as Redondo tries to go through. There's a show! Glorious goal! He's done it! Maradona!
So that was at USA 94, and unfortunately that was about it as far as Maradona goes. It was an incredible goal, the interchange between the Argentinians at the top and then wonderfully finished by Maradona. But that summed up, because it wasn't known for the goal, it was known for the still frame right down the face of the camera, full frontal, Maradona right there
unhinged.
In front of you. Unhinged.
Yeah.
Maradona, not Diego, Maradona. His life just never got back control, but there was a sense, and I got the sense just viewing it, and you read the stories and always come out that he was like, you saw that footage of him in Mexico and then he was over in the UAE trying to manage teams, and wherever he was like he was almost okay with it deep down, that he knew he was doing 80 in a 60 zone his entire life, but he was quite happy to speed because he knew eventually it was going to catch up. But what a life.
You mentioned in Mexico, so he took charge of I think it's La Liga MX2 or basically the championship equivalent of the Mexican top flight. And he took charge of a club called Dorados, who, for anyone who wants to go and watch it on Netflix, the series is actually really, really good, because you can see that his coaching ability is almost non-existent. But what he does do is he inspires every single person around him. I felt a bit sorry for his assistant manager, who was doing everything, realistically, all the tactical work and all the training sessions. But the players were in awe of him, and they would run through brick walls for him. And they got to two playoff finals back, and then they lost both 2 years running. And there were times when he would walk out onto the pitch and he would still, you know, there's so many videos around the world of Maradona dancing, because it's what his passion is. He loves it. And you can see him, he would go onto the pitch with the players during training sessions the day before a game, and he would be dancing with them.
He couldn't help it.
He'd be doing keepy uppies and juggling the ball when he could, but you could watch him. He was in physical pain every time he walked. His legs were so bowed by it. You know, that time at that point in his life where his arthritis in his knees was so bad.
After being kicked by all these Italian defenders throughout the late 80s.
Exactly right. But he didn't let it stop him enjoying life. Mm. And you could see that. He was so happy. And this is at a time as well when he was clearly still having drug problems. They made that obvious. And he went in for heart surgery, and the president of the club didn't know if he was coming back. And then he does come back and, you know, spoiler alert, they don't win the playoff final again. But he still comes back, and there's this love of football that he has never been able to shake. And I read really quickly a little piece this morning that said, you know what, he had this ability to piss everybody off, but nobody could ever stay mad at him.
That's a wonderful little vacuum to find yourself in life.
Yeah.
In general, not many of us can say that. Just about that aura you talked about, and Robbie Slater obviously has the famous story. He has his jersey. I've seen it with my own eyes, and it's quite incredible. And that is now an artifact. Obviously, he's given it to a museum, and well done, Robbie, for that, colleague here at Fox Sports, of course. But he's told this story many times, but today of all days, we've got to revisit it. And this was Robbie Slater on the Matty Johns podcast not that long ago, telling the story of how it came to pass that he ended up with Diego Maradona's shirt after a World Cup qualifier in 1993. Here in Sydney.
As the world's media starts pouring onto the field to go around Maradona, he's brushing people away and makes a beeline straight for you. Now, I don't suppose you speak Spanish, but what did he do? Did you find out what he said to you?
Apparently he said that he just kept repeating, "I was the best. You're the best. You're the best." And
wow.
He was grabbing me on the cheek, and it hurt. Like, it was quite hard, but it was very affectionate. And he's only a little guy, you know. So he sort of turned away, and everyone's chasing him for his shirt. And I thought, well, there's no point asking him for his shirt. He'll give it to whoever he wants. So anyway, I don't know what happened, and off I went towards the tunnel.
But you ended up with his shirt, courtesy of his wife, Claudia.
So I get to the tunnel, right?
Yeah.
And it's pandemonium still, and you want to stay out and soak up that atmosphere. But we realise it's 1-1, it's half time.
Yeah.
But for us, we were so much the underdogs that it feels nearly like a win. So I get to the tunnel and this guy in a suit, and it ends up being the team manager, speaks pretty good English, broken English, and he says, Robbie, please, this is, and you know where the bench is at the old, well, it's knocked down now, so you had one on one side, you got the tunnel going up. So looking down at me is this blonde girl, and I instantly recognise, because I've seen photos in the papers, it's Claudia, it's Maradona's wife, there's no doubt about it. Mm. And she's looking at me and she's doing this, and I'm going...
Still got it.
Yeah. And well, there was a little thought, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
So the manager starts saying, oh, Claudia wants your shirt. And I'm going, yeah, mate, you know, yeah. And I looked up at Claudia and I'm thinking, I can't say no to Maradona's wife. So I took it off slowly and I went and I handed it up to her and she was like this and like that. I went, yep. And by the time I looked around, the manager's gone. I thought, well, I'm going to look like a real idiot. So I walked up the tunnel, you know, it's a fair distance.
Yep.
And other players were coming in and everyone swapped with that. That's what you did in those days. And, you know, they were big names, you know, Batty Studer's shirt and all this. So anyway, I get into the dressing room and I sit down and I go, well, this is good. And everyone's sitting around. You've been in the dressing rooms. And Arnie looks across to me and I think Milan Ivanovic, who was our sweepy, and they look, so Robbie, did you get a shirt? And I went... No, I said, I gave it to Claudia. And they looked at me and they go, what? Yeah. I said, Maradona, I started to try and launch into this story. This is just a, you know, we're all sweat running down us. And they go, you're an idiot. I go, well, you know, like, and they just started laughing. They started laughing. Next minute, there's a tap on the door, Matty. It's the manager again. He pops his head in. He looks across and he speaks to him and he says, Diego wants to see
Robbie.
And a few of the other players, some had already gone in the shower, but a few of the players heard it and go, well, you can't go in there. I mean, yeah.
Still another leg to play. Still,
yeah. And I looked at him and I hesitated about 3 seconds. I said, yeah, see you later. And I went straight across. So I went across the little distance and that's when...
And he was waiting for you?
He was waiting. So I walked in those days there was lockers where they had all this stuff and he come up and he pinched me again on the face and he was doing this with both his hands and turned around. He got his sweaty shirt, which I'd never washed till this day. And he gave it to me and said a few words. And the manager said, you know, like this. And Diego's going and said, I said, see you in Buenos Aires. Then he turned around and gave me his tracksuit and his training top.
Wow.
But how good's this?
Dottie, where you grew up, that wasn't even a blip on the radar, like Argentina or Australia. You probably didn't even know that the result happened. Maradona set up the goal in the first leg. They went over there. Maradona was part of it. They get to USA 94 and what happens, happens, what we had earlier with that goal against Greece. But that... that Maradona coming to Australia was just like, wow, it's the whirlwind. Because obviously here it's rugby league, AFL, cricket, big stories. But someone like that comes on and it's funny you see everyone else from other sports who not deride football but don't give it a lot of respect day to day. All of a sudden all those balls came crashing down and it was, wow, this absolute rock star is here and everyone got into it, everyone.
It must have been like for people who never really – realised just what the Harlem Globetrotters were. He was essentially a Harlem Globetrotter on his own and he was then the rest of the Argentina team who weren't bad, by the way.
But playing for keeps.
Exactly right.
His life, yeah.
And I can just imagine that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to see, well, I suppose the comparison would be when people talk about watching Lionel Messi play football.
Mm.
And I've been fortunate enough to see him play for Barcelona. I've seen him play for Argentina in the flesh numerous times. But, you know, it was that, I remember being at the 2018 World Cup and just seeing people outside who were supporters of other nations who had got a random ticket, you know, by the draw, whatever it was, for Argentina or Iceland. And this is a game, by the way, where something else happened. We'll come on to that in just a second. But the I remember speaking to fans before that game and it was their excitement and they could not stop smiling the fact that they were saying, we get to see Lionel Messi play in the flesh.
Mm.
And I can imagine that's exactly what that would have been like for people who are never, ever going to get that chance any other time in their life to watch Diego Maradona play, regardless of how old he is.
Well, Maradona was at that game, obviously. And just before you get to that story, I was there at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. So it's Brazil-Argentina. You think All Blacks Wallabies is big. You think Ashes cricket is big. This has its own little category in the library, so to speak. And I was there and they were singing this song the whole time. I can't speak Spanish. So I don't know what the hell's going on. I can't speak Portuguese. I'm there saying, si, si, obrigado to everyone and just nodding my head and smiling and having a great time. But these Argentinians invaded Rio. They just came from everywhere. Copacabana Beach was like an Argentinian camper van shop, basically. It was just camper vans for miles. It smelled a bit because they were going to the toilet in the street, but they were just loving it. And one night I went down to Ipanema Beach for a swim at dusk. And there was these Argentinians just kicking a ball. And they were like from 30 metres away on the beach, soft sand, trying to get it into a bin. Oh, cool. I'll join in. Hey, guys, how you going? Yeah, and they spoke a little bit of English, so we kind of get on. And we get talking and they hand over a bit of Fernet and Coke. Have you ever had Fernet, the drink? It's like a licorice-type liqueur.
Maybe.
My God. Yeah. Puts hairs on your chest and then takes them off the next morning. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, we're down there on the beach. And at this point, it was like the second half of the World Cup. And I asked them, hey, guys, Messi is Messi, obviously, and we all love Messi, and the kids of today absolutely love Messi. But why? I just get this feeling that he doesn't quite have this status with you guys that Maradona does. And one of the guys looked at me and goes, Messi is Messi, and we love him. But Maradona is Maradona. Diego is Diego. And he didn't say anything after that. It was like a full stop. But he gave me this look as if to say, there's your disciples and you think, and then there's a God. And this guy was on another planet. No matter what Messi did that World Cup, which is if Gonzalo Higuain could shoot, he wins a World Cup.
Yeah.
he helps. But I think what he did in 86, around that time of the Falklands War, and obviously 90, what happened to him as well, he had his faults. And the Argentinians don't mind faults. It's how they live their life. They just live life as well. That Maradona couldn't be touched, will never be touched in terms of a status. And there's this song that the Argentinians sung every opportunity they got, every opportunity they got, and this is it. So that loosely translates to Brazil. Tell me how it feels to be bossed around in your own home. I swear that even if years pass, we will never forget that Diego outskilled you, first mentioned, that Canny surprised you, he scored the goal. You are crying since Italy, World Cup 1990 till today. You are going to see Messi. The World Cup will be ours. Maradona is greater than Pelé. The punchline. So second, so one mentioned Messi, two mentions Maradona, and that was the age-old debate. Who was better, Maradona, Pelé? I couldn't care. Argentinians obviously have a vote. Brazilians have a vote. But, yeah, it's the debate that will never be settled, and nor should it be.
And there was a beautiful tweet from Pelé today that I saw. It was essentially, I've lost a great friend. Hopefully one day we'll get to play football together in the sky again. And it was as if there was no even mention of the rivalry. Because bearing in mind, like I said earlier, Pelé was one of the people that Maradona pissed off at one point.
Mm.
But he didn't care. You can't stay mad at Diego. Like, it's that's the way it was.
Gets away with it.
Yeah, he does. And for him to say that, you know, and it was always, it's now the modern-day Messi-Ronaldo debate, isn't it? Mm. It's, you know, and you throw those two legends in as well. But just for this person to still have this emotional pull on the people of that country, there were no doubt, when he was in hospital recently, when he came out of surgery, there were people crying tears of joy outside the front of hospital because he was seemingly okay.
Mm.
These are people that have got Maradona 10 tattooed on their back. That's how big a pull this man has.
Not
in
a shirt.
Just a tattoo on their skin, Maradona 10.
What about 2018 World Cup? Sorry, I jumped in about the Iceland game. So you were there and were you watching the game or were you watching something else?
Well, it became very apparent very quickly that Argentina-Iceland, group stage game of the World Cup, Spartak Moscow Stadium, great stadium as well, real proper football stadium. And the atmosphere was superb. And you said you had the Argentinian fans pretty much three quarters of the stadium, if not more, because Iceland are so few and far between the supporters. I think the whole of the country was there for that tournament. But it became really obvious that something else was happening in the stadium. And we saw it on our monitors at first that we then realised that probably above our heads, but certainly within, you know, within eyesight, probably, let's say, 30 metres behind us, was Maradona in a box, with a FIFA delegates box. And, you know, everybody has seen the picture since about just the state that he was in. You can see powder on the glass in front of him. He's ripping the glass, almost ripping the glass panels away. He's so angry. Next minute, he's almost comatose in his chair. You know, he's got people looking after him left, right and centre. And
this was oscillating.
Yeah.
It was up and down.
Yeah. And, you know, it was obvious what had put him to that state.
Yeah.
And it was so sad to see the things that he was doing to tarnish him. But almost, you know, he didn't realise that he was doing what he was doing. And there's no excuse for it. There was elements of racism towards what he was doing to some Korean supporters nearby him. And, you know, there was a period where they thought, it might have been that game or the game after, where they thought he'd had a heart attack.
I think it was the Nigeria game.
I think it was, yeah. And they had to have a doctor in the box because
he could have gone.
He could have gone there and then.
But you nearly caught him. You're basically underneath. Yeah, well, you weren't sure that he was going to tip over the edge of the box there.
And the weird thing is, as I mentioned earlier about that feeling of being able to watch Messi play. Now, Messi wasn't particularly brilliant at this tournament. And, you know, everybody is fixated. There was this sort of like a holding of the breath every time he touched the ball. I didn't care about that. I've seen him play loads of times before. I could not stop watching this box above me, watching Maradona like doing the cross and then screaming, looking up at the heavens. I think Barcelona maybe got a penalty in that game. I think, God, maybe they even missed it, I think. But it was Argentina, not Barcelona. But it was just one of those moments where I could not believe what I was seeing. And I wasn't even, from what he did at this game, because he said the racist element was at another game, but I didn't even care. And I don't get starstruck very often because in our business, we're very fortunate that we get to work with and meet some really high-profile and cool people. I was mesmerised by him.
Mm.
And this is a guy that is in, you know, in a dark place at the time. And it feels bad saying that now, but this is just unbelievable to see someone like that. He had this aura around him that supporters, like, you know, could not stop watching him.
Well, on that aura, James, I'm going to bring in someone who's not, you know, day-to-day connected with football, but I've been to a World Cup with him and it was bloody good fun. Warren Livingston, who runs the Fanatics and a few other ventures as well, like running pubs in Sydney, but he's got this great story of Diego Maradona. Now, usually you wouldn't think, oh, Warren Livingston, Diego Maradona, but the two came together at the Davis Cup a number of years ago where Diego decided to rock up and was there doing his thing as a Fanatics leader and cheering on Leighton Hewitt. And Woz, thanks for joining us, mate, on the Fox Football Podcast. Take it away. Tell us this encounter with Diego Maradona, which I reckon is one of the great ways of summing up what an aura the bloke had and how he lived his life post-football.
Yeah, it's a crazy time. It was 2006. I was over there in Buenos Aires, obviously fantastic place. And the tennis was about to start. And anyway, Diego Maradona comes in. He's sitting in the front row. Basically, the whole crowd stood up and clapped him in. He came in literally at the last minute while the players are warming up on court. So, you know, it's pretty quiet. He walks in. The crowd goes berserk. You know, he sits down the front, in the very front seat, and orchestrated the crowd the whole day. Everything he did, they did. Every time he stood up, he got them to stood up. It was like the emperor. It was unbelievable. Anyway, during the game, Leighton was getting crushed and I was gesturing for Diego to sit down every time he got up, you know, just kind of giving him a bit of banter. Anyway, he told me to sit down and the second time he told me to sit down, he kind of gave me the fat gut as if I had a fat gut gesture. And there was a pole in front of me, so I kind of gave him a reminder of some of the hijinks that he'd been caught up with doing it on poles, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if I can mention that on the show, but
we get the idea.
You know what I mean? Anyway, he then pointed at me and did the slit your throat, you're dead. And the crowd turned on me. There was 14,000 and I've never sat down so quickly. I was so scared. These guys were rabid. It was out of control, right? They all were coming on to me and pushing me in the back. And anyway, I sat down. Thankfully, Australia got flogged because if Australia won, I don't think I would have got out of there. But the crazy thing was, after that, I was kind of one of the last people in the stadium because I didn't really want to get out and get punched. So I stayed in there, and as I was walking out, I saw this massive scrum of people with cameras going berserk, and I thought, mate, that must be Maradona. So I went up and said, Diego, Diego. And he looked over to me. He was tiny. He's such a small guy. He looked over to me in the middle of it and said, come with me, like gestured come. Well, I didn't speak any English. And so I kind of went in this scrum with him and all his minders, and we went back into this beautiful suite. It was all white, white leather couches. Everything was white. And inside there was probably, I'd say, at least 20 Argentinian supermodels all sitting around this big kind of U-shaped leather couch with Diego sitting in the middle, and he said, come and sit with me. So I was sitting with these unbelievable 12 out of 10 models drinking champagne and getting up to all kinds of hijinks. So it was an unbelievable night. And throughout the whole night, it was incredible. The Prime Minister was coming in. Everybody was coming in. As many stars as you can imagine from the Argentinian football team, et cetera, were coming in. And Diego was just this god that everybody looked at. You know, everybody was, you know, they basically bowed down to him whenever they met him. It was, I know that's part of their culture, but it was fascinating to see how highly regarded he was.
How did you communicate throughout the night? You just kind of laughed about what had happened, or?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he spoke fluent, obviously, Spanish. I spoke no Spanish, and he didn't speak much English. And so I kind of spoke to him in English. He spoke in Spanish. We kind of laughed and, you know, used hand gestures. We didn't speak much at all. I kind of was trying to speak to the Argentinian models, and he was obviously fascinated with them as well. And we kind of talked every now and then, but he really didn't understand what I said, and I definitely didn't understand what he said.
Hope for your sake, was this was pre-marriage?
Well, mate, I had no chance. These girls were unbelievable. I had no chance. They were phenomenal.
Oh, man.
I backed myself, but not that well.
Well, Woz, you've enjoyed your life, but not as much as Diego Maradona, and that's a little inkling for us about what life was like day to day. This is his life every day. Warren Livingston, really appreciate your time on the Fox Football Podcast, mate. Catch you soon.
Thanks, boys. See ya. Bye.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
It just kind of, I wanted to say that, and a lot of football fans would look at it and go, oh, why are you getting him on, blah, blah, he's not footballer, why do you put him on a Diego Maradona podcast? It's just to give you a bit of an indication of what this guy's life.
Footballers don't have stories like that.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's quite incredible. Have you got anything to kind of sum it all up, James, in terms of a story? My little story, sorry to jump in firstly, is about the fact that 1986, I was a bit young to really get it. I was 8, so you kind of watch it, but you don't remember it. You don't really involve yourself. But 1990 and watching that unfold, and you remember it, and that's the tournament that kind of gripped me with football forever. And then obviously 1994, and then you see this life unravel, and have him come here in 1993 when I think it was in year 9 at school. Ugh. Just watching it and just watching it all unfold and getting the tail end of this guy's life, it's nothing short of remarkable, and learning about the two people coexisting in a world that was born out of the fact that he could kick a football and kick it really well. It's just a fascinating social study as much as anything, as much as you don't want it to be. But the guy is, revered for a reason, and you can totally understand why.
My one of my favourite stories about him, I don't think it's a particularly well-known one, but after he left Napoli, he went to Sevilla for a season. And one of the players at the time, who is now arguably, well, certainly is in their folklore of their history, is a guy called Monchi. He's now the sporting director. He was there originally, he left, came back. And he is this person that is, you know, revered in the football industry for being able to spot a player and bring them in. Players like Dani Alves and Luis Fabiano at Sevilla. You know, this is how good he is. And he was never really a brilliant footballer, but he's gone on to forge himself in Sevilla's history for this reason. Anyway, Monchi's at Sevilla at the time. And he's in the changing room. And this is where Maradona's there. And he comes in and he goes, oh, nice watch. And Monchi's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm paraphrasing here. He's like, oh, thank you very much. It's not real. It's a fake Cartier. Oh, okay, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they chat about something else. The next day, Monchi comes into the training room. There's a box on his seat. Opens it up. It's a real Cartier watch. And Diego comes in and he says, my friends don't wear fakes. and that's it. And that is that just sums up how he cared for everyone else, you know. And like we said, we've spoken at length about his indiscretions and things that people judge him on, but this is a completely flawed human being who gave himself to everybody else.
Too much.
Ultimately, you know, it was his unravelling at the end of the Naples era and the end of his Argentina career as well. But my word, just what a human being.
Happily, his life, well, unhappily in the end, his life was too much. He I saw it put up beautifully this morning on social media somewhere. It's like he fit 200 years of life into 60. So which would you take at the start of life? Would you want to live for 200 years and stretch it all out, or do it all in 60 and get it done? So that's up to whoever is particularly involved. But of course, we'd still love Diego Maradona to be on earth, but what a time on earth he had. James Dodd, thanks very much for joining us on this special podcast for Fox Football. And as we go out, I'm actually going to play the song which this podcast is named after, because it is the clip that has me besotted every single time I watch it. It has me bewitched. I can't take my eyes off it. It's 2.5 minutes long. Won't play the whole song, but it's Diego Maradona. If you can picture it and get onto YouTube after it, we can obviously only run the audio, but it's Diego Maradona warming up for the 1989 second leg UEFA Cup semi-final against Bayern Munich.
Laces undone as well. Not even done his laces up on his boots.
In Munich. And he's just warming up his way. The song is by an Austrian band, Opus. This was number one everywhere at the time in the mid-80s, but this gets a run and makes this song eternal itself. It's called Life is Life. I'll take you out with Opus and Life is Life, and thanks again for your company on the Fox Football Podcast, the Diego Maradona special.